Hello and welcome to episode 17 of Track. At Track, our aim is to shine a light on the UK running club scene. This week on Track, we discuss the continued discussion surrounding the consultation process of equalising distances for male and female cross-country events in the UK. We talk through Keely Hodgkinson's amazing indoor 800 metre race, and we have an interview with marathon man and Olympics bound Johnny Mellor. As always, I'm joined by 15-minute 5K man, George Beardmore. How are you, George?
Yeah, all good, thank you. Yeah, just finished semester one exams at university, all online. And yeah, training well. All good.
Good stuff. Also joined by five-time marathon runner, Kat Hutchinson. How are you, Kat?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
And we're also joined by all-round nice guy, Robbie Campbell. How are you doing, Robbie?
That's the worst introduction yet.
Yeah, the best I had today.
That's a shame.
You okay?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, how are you doing?
Yeah, very good. How's the how are the injuries and the training and everything else?
I am feeling a lot better really. So just not really training in terms of sessions, just trying to do some solid miles and trying to do as much as I possibly can on soft ground, which has made a massive difference over the last couple of weeks. So lucky enough to have a really nice kind of golf course, just literally a stone's throw away from my house. So doing pretty boring loops of that, but the kind of difference on my legs and on my hip and piriformis kind of ongoing injury is unbelievable. Just kind of 1 week of kind of soft ground running is pretty much sorted it out. So I'll just continue to do that and start introducing some sessions in at some point.
Very good. I don't suppose people playing golf on there at the moment, is there?
No. It is, there is only one path across it. I think have you run across it? I'm not sure whether you have. So there's one kind of clear path across it, and the golf course have made like a massive attempt to keep people off it with like signs and glares and, you know, kind of getting people out onto the greens. And it's a bit like Walking Dead. People have kind of just increasingly with each lockdown just kind of spread out and just using it like a massive park. So it's just a free reign now. So yeah, just making the most of it, really. It's quite a nice opportunity to run on nice, soft surface.
You're doing your drills and strides across the greens, are you?
Yes. Just smashing the fairways. Yeah. Straight through the 18th.
Any good sessions recently, George? Any tasty sessions you've done?
I had like a back spasm sort of thing a couple of weeks ago. It lasted 2 weeks, and I could run, but I couldn't do any sessions. And I think I've done 2 weeks of sessions now. And the first few were, you know, I felt a little bit sluggish to begin with, but did a tempo run yesterday that felt really good. Did 6 miles at 5:26 a mile and felt really comfortable throughout. I've got a hill session tomorrow, still building up towards the half marathon in Loughborough is still going ahead at the moment, but there's got to be no chance. So planning a time trial end of February. So well, 10-mile time trial. So yeah, just trying to get back into shape for that, really.
Pulled along that time trial by coach and pretty good athlete, Frank Baddick, are you?
Yeah, he mentioned to me that if that weekend he was planning to do a long tempo run at the sort of pace I'd run for 10 miles. So he might do 15 or 20 or however far. I just try and get dragged around.
Kat, how are you doing? How was the Zoom strength classes?
Yeah, they're good. So we've done two since the last episode and they've been really good. Becky Selby really does know her stuff for running strength training, because she's a runner herself and a personal trainer. It's very running specific and it's really good. Like, we do a lot of the stuff we know we should be doing, like the glute bridges and things like that, lots of core stuff. And yeah, it's been really good just to see everyone again on Zoom. So I'm hoping I've managed to do it more than just the times on the Thursday with them, so hopefully I'll get stronger.
Yeah, and just building the mileage otherwise?
Yeah, so just trying to do about 60 a week at the moment, having a bit of a down week this week and then carry on just doing that. I'd like to get up to 70, but it just seems I can't quite get up that quick.
Good stuff. We're ticking along quite nicely then. Let's jump into some results then, guys. You had a couple of events and a couple of athletics meets to actually watch as well on the BBC. First one we're going to mention is on the 29th of Jan in Germany in a place called Karlsruhe. We saw a bit of British interest across the distances. We saw Elliot Giles of Birchfield run an 800 metre race in 145.5, second off his PB. We saw Andrew Butcher compete in 3,000 metres running a 740, about 3 seconds off his PB. And we also saw Melissa Courtney Bryant of Poole AC, also in a 3,000 metre event running 8.42. So some pretty good times there in Germany on the 29th of Jan. Nice to see some athletics on the BBC, which will also mention a suggestion that the BBC will also renew the Diamond League coverage going forward, which will be good. George, there was also another meet that same weekend in Vienna on the 30th of Jan, and I suppose one real standout performance at that meet.
So Keely Hodgkinson, who's still only 18, she broke 2 minutes for the first time, 800 metres indoors, and smashed the world under 20 record, which had stood since 2004. She broke it by 2 seconds and ran 159.04, so first under 20 to go under 2 minutes indoors as well. She moves fourth on the British indoor 800 metre all-time list behind Muir, Riki and Jenny Meadows. So pretty good company to be in for someone who's still only 18. She said in her interview after the race that it was all about not panicking when they all went off so fast. But to be honest, it could not have gone better. So I'm really happy. So great start to the season. First race since the BMC's last summer, I think. So to come out in that kind of form is very impressive. And to think a PB going into the weekend was 2:01 from Vienna last year indoors. So clearly likes running indoors, clearly likes running in Vienna, and massive PB to start the season.
I know we've all watched it because we've been talking about it on the group chat. Kat, a pretty good performance. And Robbie, fairly impressive running from Hodgkinson there.
Just looks absolutely superb, didn't she? So, like George says, she's so young, potentially got another go at kind of lowering it. She just looked so smooth, and it's just really exciting for British middle distance track ladies running at the moment. It's just a bit of a conveyor belt of top talents, isn't it, as well? So she also, Kate, I don't know how much of a difference it would make. Probably George is probably best to answer this, but she seems to kind of come quite a long way round the outside on the track. I mean, obviously it's small margins, but she seemed to kind of do it the hard way, really. I presume it was her tactics, and she must have had them spot on. But I don't know what anyone else thought. It seemed like she kind of came pretty wide in order to get to the front.
Yeah, and obviously indoor, although her PB was indoors before this, indoor tracks aren't as fast as well. So you'd think now she's around 159, might be able to get into some Diamond Leagues, and then you could get dragged round by the world's best to an even bigger PB. So definitely margin for improvement as well.
Should say that she is at Lee Club AC, which is in Greater Manchester, if you haven't mentioned that already. Okay, so good stuff. Very exciting. Robbie, completely different end of the spectrum when it comes to here, but one we couldn't really not talk about was the Hoka Project Carbon X on the 23rd of Jan.
So this was, I suppose, Hoka's answer to the sub-2 Nike attempt to coincide with the release of the new Carbon X2 shoe. So the idea being that this is all set up for him to beat the 100K record in the new Carbon X2 shoe, which stood from 2018, which was the Japanese ultra runner Nao Kazami. And it wasn't quite the spectacle of the sub-2 attempts. Anyone that doesn't know Jim Walmsley's an American ultra runner who's got he kind of divides opinion in kind of what he does for some reason. I think because he's always gone out really hard and attempted to kind of win ultra races almost with a track mentality of kind of running from the front and running hard. And he's kind of made big promises in the past about what he's going to do. And ultimately he had a few failures, but he's also had, you know, a few glorious successes kind of in the Western States, breaking the record. And he fell absolutely agonisingly short. So the record is 6:09.14, like I said, and he fell 12 seconds short of the record, which when you're running kind of 3:42 kilometer pace, looks kind of like he was like running in treacle, really. And I don't know if you all saw it, but the final kind of couple of K, when they come onto the big wide, almost like runway type kind of finish, and he's checking his watch every kind of 10 yards, and he obviously can't run any faster. And it, you know, it's kind of unusual to see a pro athlete, you know, in that situation, really, because you almost forget he's run so far. But yeah, felt agonizingly short, 12 seconds. So he described it later as kind of bittersweet. Still an amazing attempt, and I'm sure he'll go back and try and do it again. But ultimately, just kind of fell slightly short.
You've bought some Hokas off the back of that, haven't you, Robbie?
Before, actually, to be honest.
Oh, so he saw you in them, did he?
I presume, well, he won't have done, actually, because they're still in the box.
Box fresh. Nice.
Yeah, I don't want to run. I don't want to try them while I'm injured, to be honest. So I feel like if I run in them while I'm injured, my relationship with them will be badly affected from the start. So I'm kind of gearing up to a some kind of session where I'm actually feeling at my best. So they could be in the box for a while.
Are you wearing them around the house?
Yes, is the honest answer. I wore them for a full day's work in my house.
Bit shorts as well.
Always split shorts at home, mate.
Of course. Cool. Always. Good stuff. All right. Thanks, guys. Let's move on to some of the news. I suppose a bit of a downer to start off with. Former interviewee of track and friend of the show, Dan Nash, tweeted on the 31st of Jan that unfortunately there will be no Olympic marathon trials for him. He says, I'm recovering from COVID-19 and I still get symptoms when I try to do anything more intense than a walk. He says, I'm sure I'll make a full recovery, but I don't want to risk my health rushing back. And he said, I hope you enjoyed following along my journey, because what he was doing, which was really nice, he was posting every week all of his training. So on Twitter, he would post all the miles he'd run, all the sessions he'd done and everything else. He thanked his sponsors. So yeah, some sad news for Dan Nash, and the Olympic trials now only 7 or 8 weeks away. So not long before that race at Kew takes place. He had quite a few well wishes on Twitter. Tom Bosworth, Ali Dixon, Tom Evans and others were all wishing him well. Other COVID news, I suppose, is that more postponements of races, more cancellations, such as the British Champs, which have been cancelled. It means there'll be no national indoor champs in the UK for the first time since 1961. It was due to take place in Glasgow in Feb, but that's not happening. Also, a big blow to lots of people, I know, will be the fact that the night of the 10,000 metres PBs has been cancelled. That meeting was due to incorporate both the European 10,000 metre cup and the British Olympic trials for the 25 lap discipline. But now those two events are seeking alternative venue options. Laura Muir has said that she will not be competing at the European indoors recently. She said she's going to focus on the Olympics. There was some sort of suggestion or thought that she may be attempting a triple double at next month's European indoor champs in Poland. Now 27 years of age, though, has suggested that in the year of the Olympics, we tend to focus on the outdoors. She didn't want to do anything which may mess up her Olympic dream. Guys, we also saw, I'll get your opinion on this one. The London Marathon has said that they are still very hopeful of putting on a mass event in October. And in fact, the headline reads, London plans 100,000 person marathon. When you actually read the article, that's a 50,000 person live event, so taking to the streets of London, and another 50,000 people running the virtual race. So what are your thoughts on that? Kat, shall I start with you?
Yeah, I think it's everyone you speak to seems to have a different opinion on how optimistic that is. I tend to always err on the side of optimism, so I think, yeah, it's probably going to go ahead. It's fine. COVID keeps throwing in new variants and new twists and turns, so who knows? If you look to where we were in sort of autumn this year, towards the end of summer, we were almost completely out of lockdown. Everything was, you know, there were events on and things. Looking at it now, it seems a lot less likely, but by the time we get the summer out the way, I think it's I think there's still a chance for it.
Seems a long way off at the moment, I think. I mean, I find it weird how London Marathon think they can do 50,000 people in the marathon, but the 9-10K PBs has been cancelled already. I mean, and that seemed a bit of a premature cancellation, I'd say. I know, I mean, track meets happened last year, so I don't really see why that won't be able to happen. I know the whole event is kind of people in lane three, big crowds, but nowhere near as big a crowd as the London Marathon. So, yeah, a bit of a difference in those kind of organisers' thoughts, I think. But hopefully 50,000 people will be able to run London. It would be brilliant that if stuff like that can go ahead this year. So, yeah, fingers crossed.
I can't. I'm the complete opposite to Kat. I'm just really cynical and really negative and really pessimistic when it comes to stuff like this at the moment. How much has got to change between now and October for this to happen in any kind of shape or form? It's almost like, so everyone's got to be, pretty much the whole vaccination program will have to be rolled out. It will have to be effective. And then there's, and then the variants can't be causing any trouble or any problems. Like, the cynical part of me just thinks that they've come out with this kind of outlandish statement to kind of, as almost like a self-publicity, positive kind of advertising spin to maybe drive the numbers up for the virtual thing, which inevitably will be the kind of, you know, the main event again. I don't know. We just seem so far away from it that I can't believe it. So I'm going to put my money on no, Ben. That's where my money's going.
I think out of all the marathons that were meant to be on last year or last autumn, London was one of the last to cancel, wasn't it? It was one of the ones that kind of tried to keep it going for the longest. So yeah, maybe it does just help with their publicity to make people believe there will still be a marathon. I'm still going to stay hopeful.
The thing with the big events like the Londons and the other big six or however many there are, I don't know what the numbers are exactly, but you get a lot of international runners at those events as well. So they'd have to have sort of international travel back to where it is as well, I assume, if they want all 50,000 people with places to be able to run. Because it's an international affair, really, those sorts of big marathons, aren't they?
That is a good point, because I know that when you listen to Inside Running podcasts and they're talking about the kind of bigger city races in Australia, they're completely Australian, aren't they, as far as I can gather? So no, absolutely no foreign travel still. So the races are there for the taking for kind of Australians to kind of medal in place, because obviously they get a lot of kind of Japanese runners, don't they? Maybe New Zealand runners and, you know, coming over to race those races. So, yeah, so it would have to be, yeah, I mean, it's another hurdle that I didn't mention before, yeah. The travel ban would have to be effectively lifted. No chance.
Okay. You heard it here first. It's not happening. The Antrim Half Marathon has joined the IAAF Road Race Label events. So what that means is the Antrim Coast Half Marathon becomes the first event in Ireland and only the third in the UK alongside the London Marathon, the Cardiff Half, to join the prestigious series of IAAF/World Athletics Road Race Label events. It's been touted as the most beautiful road race in the world, as we know, because of the most recent event where we saw Mo Farah and others take to the streets or the coasts. It's held on the iconic Antrim Coast Road in Northern Ireland. And now the event will sit alongside major cities such as Houston, Mumbai, Dubai, Napoli, and others. They have to sort out their live stream, I suppose, now, won't they? Because that was poor. So hopefully with that move, we'll get a better live stream this year. There's also going to be a small selection event at Lee Valley, Loughborough and Manchester. I don't know if you know much about this one, George, on Feb the 20 and 21st, which will help UKA pick the team for European indoors.
I mean, it sounds like they've just cancelled British Champs and then just split British Champs into three different places based for different, yeah, so like distance events in one place, field events in another, just to limit numbers, I suppose, which it makes sense, I suppose. I mean, I don't think it's because it's not officially British Champs, is it? So people won't get a medal, or they won't become a British champion, which is a, I think it's a bit of a shame. If they can do this, then they could still call it British champs. Just because it's not happening in one place doesn't mean it can't be. So, but at least they're putting on some sort of event for people to qualify for European indoors that's still going ahead at the moment.
Yeah, and that is supposed to happen next month in, where is it taking place? Tehran?
Poland, I think.
Yeah. Poland, yeah. Okay, very good. Okay, we're going to have to cover at some point the ongoing debate about the cross-country equalising distance has continued to rumble on, and I'm sure it will for a good few weeks yet. So I suppose we're not going to go over the same ground we covered last time. Kat, do you just want to give us a bit of an update?
There's been a few things. I think one thing just that we were messaging about earlier on was that quite well-written article by Martin Fitzhuber on Outside Online that gave a really balanced look from a kind of American perspective on the debate. It's a good read for anyone wanting to hear both sides, but I think it ultimately came down to saying that the decision should be the athlete's decision. Other things you can see on social media at the moment accusing Run Equal of these attempts to sabotage the surveys. They basically, when the UKA survey first came out, there was the opportunity to fill it out multiple times, and they were encouraging people to do that. Obviously, because they want the result to go their way, but without really thinking that that's actually not the way the decision should be made. It should be by the athletes and fairly done. So that loophole has been closed and you can't fill it out now multiple times. Statement by Essex, which basically they did equalise distances and then they equalised them because they thought that was a rule that was coming in and that everyone was going to have to. And they've now obviously realised that it's not actually a rule yet, and so have decided to go back to the unequal distances.
I think it will rumble on for a while, won't it? I think what I would say, and I don't know if it's just because of the people you follow on Twitter and other places, from my perspective, it does seem to be that the weight of opinion is certainly on the side of keeping it as it currently is, certainly from the stuff that I've seen. Yeah, as we said, I suppose we'll just direct you towards that article that you mentioned. There's some interesting analysis on Twitter by a guy called Johnny Curry, which was retweeted by Podium. And he tries to take a statistical look at the question as best as he could. And that was quite interesting. Generally speaking, again, it seems to lean towards the fact that actually it'd be better if the women remained at the current distances. Back Straight Boys podcast was interesting because there was a decent discussion there. But yeah, probably one for one.
Those figures were really interesting because they kind of said exactly what I was trying to message in the week about the fact that if the men's race is short and or if they're equal, the men's winner will be someone who's a mixture of speed and endurance, and the women's winner will be just an endurance runner. So it makes it like a different sport, and that's pretty much what he summarised.
Would it be fair to say that Run Equal have run quite a bad campaign all in all? I'm not saying that I'm not kind of run them down or, you know, what have you, but they just seem to have kind of made some errors maybe in how they've approached things on social media, which have left themselves open to quite easy kind of criticism, which, so at times it's almost like moved it away from the actual kind of debate and more towards how they're actually approaching it. So this kind of sabotaging of surveys and kind of getting their members to try and fill in surveys multiple times, it's kind of real kind of schoolboy errors, really. To be fair, Ben, you've come up with the best counter arguments I've heard, actually, I think, but they seem to get just kind of not your arguments particularly, but the counter arguments just seem to kind of get lost, so there doesn't seem to be much of a joined up approach to kind of getting it through. I think ultimately now I can't see how it's going to progress into a change. over the next kind of 12, 24 months, because there's so much opposition to it that unless they can find a real solution, unless UK Athletics can find a real solution that makes everyone happy and kind of lays it out as a kind of plan for people to vote on, then it's just going to go round in circles. In fact, I don't even know how it's going to end now. It's just going to be months and months of social media kind of backbiting and niggling and arguing. Yeah, I don't know how it's going to end.
Yeah, I thought Paula Radcliffe on that podcast made a good point that I hadn't actually thought of, was that the woman, the British woman, particularly on the European cross-country stage, are more successful than the men. So clearly the model they've got for women's cross-country running is working. So why change it? They've got equal opportunity, equal prize money, equal access, equal distance. Probably didn't make the racing any better. And if they're already doing well on the international stage, then it probably doesn't need to be changed. And if you've got all these high profile athletes like Paula Radcliffe, who that like they know what they're talking about, they've raced internationally, if they think it doesn't shouldn't be changed, then I think it's hard to go against that opposition to the argument.
I'm sure it will rumble on and we'll try and keep up to date with it. George, you're going to introduce this week's interview, which is a really exciting one. You sat down with this week's guest a couple of weeks ago now and had a good chat.
Yeah, it was December, I think. I interviewed Johnny Mellor about his elite marathon experiences in London last year, his training approach for the marathon. Got some really interesting insights about being a sponsored athlete, running for Team New Balance Manchester, which is kind of the only American like elite group in the UK. So it was interesting to hear his thoughts on whether he thought there should be more of that in the UK. Yeah, really enjoyed talking to him, and hopefully the listeners do enjoy listening to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're pretty sure we'll be seeing him at the Olympics if they go ahead, aren't we?
Yeah, it looks like. I think he's got himself in a pretty good position. Obviously, he needs to come top three or perform well at the trials, but the consistency he's kind of got over the marathon now, ran 2:12, I think, in, well, no, 2:10, sorry, in Seville, and then in February, and then the same again in London in October. So he's clearly a consistent performer. I can't see the trials going wrong for him, really. So hopefully he can, yeah, turn up and perform and, yeah, book his place in the Olympic team.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm getting excited to watch that now. So, yeah, we hope you enjoy that interview with Johnny Mellor. And that's it for today, guys. Anything exciting coming up this week for any of you guys? Robbie, are you up to much?
No, Ben, I'm not up to much. I'm working, running, homeschooling.
What's been the homeschooling highlight this week?
Oh, mate, bloody hell. Homeschooling highlight has been... Do you mean highlight, or highlight in terms of genuine highlight, or do you mean highlight in terms of low light?
Well, I tend to find the low lights funnier. So if you've got a low light, that might be good.
I took Thursday and Friday off last week to specifically to help with the homeschooling, just to kind of focus on it. And I spent, I spent 4 hours with my youngest, who is four, and trying to do kind of these vocabulary sheets and story sheets, etc. And at one point he was sat with three open bags of crisps in my attempt to bribe him to at least pretend that he was interested. And it ended up with me bribing him by saying that I'd teach him to write kind of rude words, which was actually a really good way. So I kind of replaced his sentences with the words poo in, or we, or, you know, words that a four-year-old obviously finds absolutely hilarious. So, so God knows what's going to happen when he goes back to school and dishes the dirt on me. But yeah, it's absolute chaos, to be honest, mate. Chaos.
George, anything as exciting as that happening for you?
No, just training, really. The exams are done now, so online lectures start again on Monday, but yeah, not as intense as revision, so more training, more chilling out. Premier League football, England, India, cricket starts Friday morning, I think, so plenty of sport to watch as well. And nice hill session to start off tomorrow. So
what have you got for the session tomorrow?
6 3-minute hill reps. It's on a road called Beacon Road, which is a good name for it. It's not a nice session, but one you've got to get done.
And jog down as recovery?
Yeah, take as long as you can to jog the 3 minutes it took you to get up. Take even longer to get back down.
Sounds good. Kat, any more strength Zoom classes up for you?
Yeah, got that again on Thursday, so looking forward to that. And that's about it. The rest of the week, very dull. Just going to be at work on the COVID ward and nothing else really going on.
Well, listen, that's it, guys. Thanks so much. And we hope you enjoy the interview again. Thanks for listening to Track. We hope you enjoy it. And if you do have any sort of questions or comments, or if you want us to talk about anything in particular going forward, just drop us a message on one of the social media platforms and we'll do our best to get back to you. All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye, Ben. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
This week on Track, we're delighted to be joined by marathon runner Johnny Mellor. Johnny runs for Team New Balance Manchester and in October won the British title at the 2020 London Marathon. In February this year, Johnny ran a marathon PB and an Olympic standard of 2:10.03 in Seville. Thank you for joining us, Johnny. How are you? How's training again?
No worries at all. Thank you very much for having me on. And all good here. Thank you. Training hard, getting ready for the race, next race, whenever that may be. All good. Thank you.
2 months since London now. How's been getting back into training? How long off did you have?
Yeah, it's flown by, to be fair. After a marathon, I normally have a week where I kind of run whenever I feel like running, really. I think maybe around 2 or 3 times at the week following London, 3-4 miles. And just kind of basically how I feel, how the body is, how the head is. We went away to Scotland, which was nice. The runs are a little bit hillier than I thought they would be up there. All good. And then since then, we've just basically been gradually building back up, gone back into a hill phase, getting some strength work back in there. And we've been training well with the group. So it's been good.
Good to hear. As an introduction, we normally just list off a few of your PBs and performances. So from power of 10, so correct me if any of these are wrong. 800 metres, 151. 1500 meters 341, a mile 358, 3000 meters 746, 5000 meters 1331, 10000 meters 2842, 62:23 for the half marathon, and then, as I said, in Seville in February 2:10.03. Which of those PBs or performances are you most proud of, and which are you most keen to improve?
Do you know what? I think the 1 mile is one that always stands out for me. I've only ever ran one mile race. So I've retired officially from the distance now. So to break 4 minutes is, something I was always wanted to do when I was growing up. So that one stands out for me. 7:46 indoors qualified me for my first world champs. And of course, the 2:10.03 earlier this year as well for the marathon. So I think 10K is one that I'd like to improve. If I get the opportunity, I'd like to improve every 10K, I think.
Yeah. And sub 2:10 for the marathon, I expect on the list as well.
Yeah. 2:02 something would be fantastic.
Yeah, I'm sure. So getting into running early years, your first input on power of 10, I think, was 2001 and under 15 at Liverpool Harriers. How did you get into running, and did you do other sports as a child?
Yes, I mean, when I was growing up, it was always really football was number one. I used to play for my local Sunday league team and for the school team, and I swam a lot. I was swimming 3-4 times a week for Hoylake Swimming Club. And then I think I was just one of them kids in school that just wanted to do everything, whatever sport it was, I wanted to do it. And I remember sort of nagging my parents to go to Wirral Athletic Club, it was at the time. And there's, you know, wait till you go to secondary school and stuff like that. So it wasn't until I went to secondary school that I started going down to Wirral. But even then, I was only running maybe once, twice a week. And all the other training come in the form of football or swimming, which looking back now, I think was great for my development. You know, because I was getting all that aerobic training in the pool without the sort of stress and the impact on my body. And I guess bit by bit, you know, the running started to take over. I started to do more running and less of the other sports. Then I finished playing football under 16s. I think I signed for the youth team, but I played maybe once or twice. That was it all season. And by that point, I was starting to run a lot more. And then yeah, I went to university and it kind of took off from there, really.
Yeah. Well, I noticed on Paraten that you then progressed pretty quickly as a like under 20, under 23. I think you went from like 8:24 as a under 23k to 8:01 as an under 23. You ran 14 flat as well, I think, as an under 23. And as you said, studied at Liverpool John Moores Uni. Was there a training group there, or did you continue training with Liverpool Harriers?
Yeah, that's why I stayed in the city, to be fair, because the group I had at the time at Liverpool Harriers was really good. And at the time, some good guys were coming to university in Liverpool, either to the Uni of Liverpool or John Moores. So we had a good setup. I was really happy with my coach and stuff at the time. So it just made sense to stay. And again, like with the swimming and that kind of side of it as well, everything I needed was there. So I would have liked to maybe experience something else, but equally, I'm happy with my decision. I enjoyed staying in Liverpool, and it was a great city, of course, to be in.
Yeah. And then when did you kind of first realise that you might be able to make a career out of running? I think you won Bucks 5,000 metres. So obviously you were doing very well at university. Did you then realise it could be your job?
I don't know about my job, but I do remember winning Bucks. I think I won it 2 years in a row, 5K, and thinking, oh, yeah, okay. You know, maybe I can, I don't know, progress further. And then when I graduated, I did get a job. So I graduated in building surveying. So I was working on a building site, I think for 6 months after I graduated. And I quickly realised it wasn't great for training. I was having to squeeze in a run on a half an hour lunch break midday and stuff like that. It just wasn't great for running. So when that contract came to an end, I was quite happy, to be fair. And it kind of naturally just gave me the opportunity to explore the running option and, you know, see what could happen. So it kind of all happened quite well for me. And then from there, yeah, just took off and got the belief then that I could make the next step up.
Yeah. And when was it you got your first international best?
Good question. I remember my first Great Britain call-up was for the Great City Games in Newcastle, the 2 mile on the key. So that was the first time I ran for GB, which was a great moment. And I think it was probably actually on the Fells. I did a bit of mountain running and fell running when I was younger. I went to Germany. I guess it must have been, maybe it was an under 20. That was uphill only, and then I had a really good trip to New Zealand to go in the world champs for mountain running. Again, I think that was in under 20, so yeah, I think they must have been my first national best.
Great. And then fast forward a little bit to 2014, you went to your first world championships, as you said, 3,000 meters in Poland, I think it was. What was that experience like, being at world championships representing GB?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great experience. Performance-wise, not great, but I think it was all part of the learning curve. It was my first, I would say, first championships. Big step up. I remember I actually ran quicker in the Northern Championships that year than I did in the World Championships. So, but it's all part of the journey, all part of the learning. I think if you come away from these things and learn from it, then great, you know. But yeah, I enjoyed it. It's good to be part of it. And that was my first sort of taste of running at the next level up.
Yeah. And then later that year, so 2014, you ran 28:52 at Highgate, came third at the British Champs, and then earned selection for the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow. What was that experience like?
Yeah, again, that was not a great experience. I dropped out of that race, and I've not dropped out of a race since. I think I dropped out of one cross country before that. So, yeah, I don't know what was up. I think I got sick in the village whatever it was, it wasn't great. I remember dropping out of the race, and where I dropped out at the start of the home straight, I tried to obviously go into the stadium, and the stewards like, you can't come in here. And I was like, I'm going to have to. And they were like, no, you've got to go all the way down the home straight and go out the finish. So I had to walk down in front of the stadium. So yeah, really not a good memory, not a good experience. And then I would have liked obviously to kick down from them, but I got a couple of injuries. So I felt like it took a while then to kind of get back up to that level as well. But yeah, competing at multi-sport games was, you know, really good and a great experience.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I've seen on your Instagram recently a very inspirational story, and if the listeners hasn't seen it, I encourage them to go and watch the video on your Instagram, where you're at a training camp in Kenya and you're diagnosed with ITP, which is a platelet, a low platelet.
Low platelet count. Yeah. I don't know the full word for ITP. I still call it ITP all these years later, but yeah.
Yeah. And then how the steroid treatment you had led to bone density reduction and three stress fractures. How difficult was that experience? And then the process of getting back into full training and racing.
Yeah, I think like I obviously briefly mentioned then, it wasn't necessarily the diagnosis of the illness. I can manage that now with medication, but initially I was put on the prednisolone, which then caused bone density loss and muscle mass loss, and put weight on. So that was the side effects, which then caused me the problems. I'd never had a stress fracture up until that point. I got two fractures in my back and one in my shin, like a stress reaction, which I'd never had before. And as I said, kind of just made first world championships, made Commonwealth Games, and that's kind of where you wanted to kick on and, you know, carry on that sort of progression, and I couldn't. But, you know, looking back now, it is what it is. I was just so lucky to have, like, Steve in my corner, a coach, you know, and obviously family and friends to support me, and obviously New Balance standing by me through, you know, a rough couple of years. So, yeah, it's a good story to tell now, I think.
Yeah, I thought, very inspirational watching, the video on Instagram. And then, 2015, I think you won the British 10,000 metre championship. So you turned it around pretty quickly. Was that your first senior British title, I believe?
Outdoors, I'd run indoors. I'd won 3K indoors. So that was before. So I'd had the diagnosis, and then I got injuries after that. So that was kind of my last sort of I didn't manage to run a marathon before my diagnosis. Before the stress fractures and stuff as well. To win Highgate, it was good. I'd medalled. I think I'd come third the year before behind Andy Vernon and Chris Thompson. To follow up the following year with a win, I was obviously really, really happy with that.
Yeah, I ran at Highgate last year, I think, and the noise, it's such an amazing
race. I think if more track races sort of took that, you know, that whole party atmosphere of it, it'd be really good, I think, for endurance sports in the UK.
Yeah, definitely. And then you ran your first marathon in Frankfurt in October 2015. You ran 2:16:52. Were you pleased with that timing, or have you learned anything from that?
But looking back now, I was quite happy. I learned so much about the distance. Probably didn't respect it enough to start with. It's a half marathon, you're just tagging on a few more miles at the end. But both me and Steve were learning so much about the distance at that point, you know, learning about fueling, learning about training. I enjoyed it. Maybe not the best performance, but it was a good, really good learning experience for me. I think, you know, I've run 9 marathons now, and I still feel like I'm maybe learning about it as well. It's sort of one of the events. Each time you run a marathon, you learn a bit more about it. So, yeah, I think it was the start of a really exciting journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, boy, your marathon PBs have progressed very quickly since then. Why was it you decided to move to the marathon in 2015? Obviously, Rio the next year. Was the Rio 10,000 metres option, was it always wanting to progress to the marathon?
I think a bit of both. I think I ran New York Half in 2012, and I debuted in 62:59. That kind of sowed the seed. I was like, oh yeah, I want to move up in distance now. I really, really enjoyed the half, and I wanted to kind of get more, you know, do some more longer distance events. And so that was always kind of the goal, then, to move up. Around about that time, a little bit few 2013, I changed coaches, and Steve was quite keen for me to continue developing over the short distances before I moved up a marathon. You know, he's very honest and didn't think I was ready to move up yet, which is, I'm fine with that. So that's why we went indoors, I think 2014, and stayed on the track for a couple of years before we actually did the first marathon. And then obviously with Rio coming up the year after, I wanted to get a taste for the distance before then, obviously running the trials, which would have been April 2016.
Yeah. And then you ran London 2017, I think, was that your next marathon?
Yeah. So, again, I really didn't feel well that day. So that was a tough one. Blew to pieces. We've all been there in the marathon. That was my first London experience, and you know, still a fantastic race to do.
Yeah, I imagine slightly different experience to it, what it was this year with the crowds and everything. But everyone raves about the London experience, so it must have been pretty cool to take part in your first one, even if it wasn't the ideal race. But then September 2017, you ran a 4-minute PB in Berlin, so you must have been pretty pleased with that race.
Yeah. And Berlin's, anyone who's run it, it's one of the fastest marathons in the world. So I think, you know, again, taking what I learned from London, the fuel, and I did not take enough on. We were starting to learn that, and Berlin was a step forwards. I think the two times around Berlin, both times, maybe on for a little bit of a faster time, we just blew up towards the end a little bit in the last sort of 10K. But I felt like I was getting closer. Around London 2018 was a heat wave. I mean, I finished second Brit in 2:17, so it's, you can't really judge that one because it was just so hot. It was just really, really, I think it got to like 24, 25 degrees at the same time. It was some crazy weather. We had the Commonwealth Games in Gold Coast, and obviously Boston Marathon as well in the wind and the rain. So it was just a few marathons that were really, really challenging. And then New York, which was a great marathon. And if it's not on your bucket list, it really should be. Everything about the whole experience, the whole weekend, the crowds, the course. It's not the fastest marathon in the world, but it's definitely difficult to say if it's my favourite, but it's certainly up there.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that you've ran three of the major marathons now. Do you have, like, do you aim to do the other three, Chicago, Tokyo, and Chicago, Tokyo, and Boston as well, isn't it? Are you hoping to do them one day?
I hope so. I hope we get a chance. It's just frustrating sometimes because, like, Boston obviously clashes with London, and Chicago clashes with Berlin and things like that. But yeah, I'd like to. When we got married last year, and all our sort of tables were with the marathon majors and stuff like that. So yeah, something I'd like to tick them all off if I get a chance. Maybe I have to do them when I'm a little bit older and see.
Yeah. So then you ran another PB in Berlin 2019. So Berlin was, it would have been pretty good to you, as you said. And then a big PB earlier this year. Were you expecting to run a 2-minute PB in February?
Maybe not 2 minutes. I think Steve kind of thought it was coming. Again, all, you know, the fueling. I'm not naive. I had the shoes on as well. That's my first marathon in carbon plated shoes. I think that helped. I think the fueling helped. I think we just got to the point where we're just like, we can run 2:12, but if we're gonna roll the dice, so to speak, and try and run an Olympic qualifying time, we're going to have to push a bit more. We're going to have to do a little bit more in training. So, you know, I think it was a combination of things. That obviously, in Seville, we had a great setup in terms of group of runners to run with. The course was great. The weather normally that time of year is fantastic, and it was when we ran. There's a lot of factors that sort of come into it. Why, you know, I made that next sort of jump and that progression up. So it was really good, and I'm really pleased that I managed to follow up in London as well, and maybe, you know, the weather when it wasn't quite as good as well.
Yeah, well, yeah, back in Seville with another 2:10 in, yeah, as I say, more difficult conditions where even Jovi struggled.
Yeah.
Must have felt really good to be 4 minutes behind him.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I just felt good not to be lapped. So I just thought, I was working out before when I'd be lapped by, so I was really surprised when they didn't come past. But then, you know, obviously he's still the greatest for me, but yeah, this a shame not to see him win this time.
And that, I remember watching it on TV, it was a pretty good battle with Ben Connor, which was his first marathon, wasn't it? How did that kind of race play out between you in, like, from your perspective, and when did you know that you were going to beat him?
I mean, I didn't know till the commentator down the home straight, to be fair. Ben, I've trained with Ben for a number of years as well. I don't anymore, but I did. And, you know, he's a great lad, and he's been running so well over the half and things like that. So I knew, you know, it'd be tough to beat him, even on his debut. So yeah, I think in marathon you go through good patches and bad patches. So it's always, I think, you know, we kept each other honest. Maybe when we went through different patches ourselves. And then as it got towards the end of the race, I think two of the other guys we were running with pushed on a little bit. And maybe we were sort of hesitant because we were racing each other at that point. So we held back. And then, I kind of made my move towards with two laps to go, I think it was, maybe pulled away from Ben with a lap to go. And as I say, I didn't know where he was because you didn't have the crowds to hear. You know, you can normally hear when people are shouting behind and things like that. So until the home straight, when the commentator sort of was announcing it, I didn't really know. And I was still pushing because I wasn't sure if he was behind me or not.
Yeah. And how did your build-up go for London? Obviously, it was maybe a bit more difficult with being in lockdown to begin with and not being able to see physios or train with the group for a period in the spring. How did your build-up go for London?
Yeah, it went well as any marathon can go, really. It's always going to be, you know, it's never, no such thing as a perfect build-up. It was actually after London, I got back into training. After Seville, got back into training, and then I pulled my calf. And normally, obviously, you kind of get on top of that straight away with physio, which I couldn't. So then I pulled it again a second time. So I'd missed a bit of training, a little bit up and down. So London was always kind of like, if we make it, great. If we don't, you know, we get sort of halfway through the build-up and, you know, we're finding it. We're not where we need to be, then maybe put it off and we'll go to Valencia later in the year. But things sort of clicked quite nicely. And by that point, you know, we could train together, certainly in pairs, and then, you know, later on in groups. So it came together quite well. Maybe not my longest of build-ups, but I think because I've done a few marathons now, that's not as important. I don't necessarily always need the 16 weeks. You know, I think London was about a 12-week build-up, so... Yeah, I think I got not lucky. I think it was well planned in terms of the build up and the structure. And we got all the sessions we needed to get in there, but perhaps if there'd been any setbacks on the way, I might have found it harder.
Yeah. And was the build up shortened because of the, or not knowing when, if and when it was going to happen because they were pushing the date back?
Yeah, so both obviously not knowing for 100%. You know, we had an idea it was going to go ahead, but then also with the calf injury, I couldn't afford to rush back too quickly. Because with obviously having the luxury of the time, I didn't have to run London. I wanted to do it because I wanted to run another marathon later in the year. But, you know, I'm glad it worked out well in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been announced quite recently that there'll be a Olympic trials for Team GB, similar to the USA format in March. What's your thoughts on this? Thoughts on the course, and would you have planned to run a spring marathon before potentially Tokyo if you had the choice?
I mean, ideal world, if I had the choice, no. I wouldn't want to run again. But I understand why. So it's fine. And, you know, at the same time, I feel privileged that we do have the opportunity to run, to get, you know, to have a marathon to run. And it's got to be fair to everyone. So yeah, in an ideal world. But we're not living in an ideal world at the moment. You know, I wouldn't have to go again. I'd like to sort of, you know, when we sat down and looked at the plan, if we planned without a trial race, it looks different to how, you know, we plan with a trial race. So, yeah, in an ideal world, I'd say I wouldn't want to do the trial. In terms of the course, you know, I didn't say, I'm just lucky we have got a course to run on. From what I gather, it's fast in terms of it's flat. I've not seen the course, so I can't really say for sure what other people are saying about it. So either way, it's the same for everyone, and I'm going to prepare to run, you know, 26 miles at the end of March. That's the bottom line at the end of the day. And obviously to Tom and the guys putting the race on, and great, you know, and thank you for the support.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're in a pretty good situation with, obviously you've got two standards now, having run sub 2:11:30 at London and Seville. Tokyo must be your main focus at the moment.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's what I'm going for. But, you know, I'm also, you know, there's some great guys out there. So if I finish third and two people finish in front of me in 2:11:29, you know, I don't go. So, yes, it's nice to have two times, but it's also, I still got to perform in March. You know, I can't go into it hard. You know, I've got to be fully focused on that.
And how frustrating was it originally after running your 2:10 in Seville when the games got pushed back a year? Were you hoping that they would be 2020? Did you feel like you were in good shape and ready to go, hopefully?
Yeah, I mean, I think we peaked for the year, you know. We sort of looked at it longer term. We peaked for 2020. We were ready to run fast in 2020. That's not to say we can't be ready to run fast next year, or, you know, in 2021, but here's what it is. I wasn't selected. I wasn't picked. So in terms of being disappointed that the games were cancelled, like everyone, yeah, I was disappointed. but it didn't really mean much because I wasn't selected anyway and I started to wait for the outcome of London Marathon. So yeah, it's just a shame for sport, you know, but obviously a lot of events went last summer as well.
Yeah. And in terms of training approach, it looks from Paris 10 that you race quite regularly. Quite often we see marathon runners, we mentioned Kipchoge, only racing a couple of times a year. How important do you think it is as part of your training blocks that you do race shorter races as a marathon like tune-up?
Yeah, I think some marathon runners, obviously not Kipchoge, but some marathon runners can become maybe too slow. So we always try and keep in touch with some faster stuff. I don't know. I think if you looked at some of the races now, the last few years, they've not been maybe as fast, but it's kind of, you know, we've been focusing on the marathon. So it's difficult to say, you know, but I found it important. It's good for motivation. It's good for training. I think, like, you know, races bring you on as well. So yeah, I find them important, but it's good to break up the monotony of training as well. You can't bang out week after week after week just training, training, training. So I think it's good for races and then good experiences and, you know, opportunity to earn money in the sport as well when you go and race. So always try and find like a half marathon if we can in the marathon build up to try and run it at pace, because I think that's a good indication of fitness where you're at and just to kind of really dial in. And, you know, it's quite specific to run a half marathon at your marathon pace. So we always try and look for something like that. If you can't find that, I think like Alsager last year before Seville, we couldn't find a half. So we did like a tempo beforehand and then ran the Alsager 5 miles, things like that. So there's ways of doing it. But yeah, I do like to race if I can, because I think it's good training, if nothing else.
Yeah.
And what I enjoy as well is what we do the sport for.
Yeah, exactly. And how would you describe your approach to training and like what's your typical marathon block look like?
Yeah, so we keep it quite simple. Like, there's no sort of hidden secrets or anything like that. We go long on a Sunday. When we're in the real specific marathon stuff, we'll then do a marathon session on the Wednesday or a half marathon session on the Wednesday. And then that's it then. Two hard sessions a week. Lots of running. Get up to like 120 mile a week. A couple of gym sessions. But yeah, during the early phases, maybe we train a bit more half marathon focused, you know, just to get fit, if anything else. So you're fit enough to do the marathon specific stuff. And that would be more, I guess, the phase that I'm in at the moment. So Tuesday, today was an 8x K on the track. Friday we'll do a session more mid-tempo based, and then Sunday long run, but obviously not quite as long. Maybe running 100 to 110 mile a week. So yeah, nice and simple, just bread and butter stuff really.
And stuff like tapering for marathon is obviously an important part of the build-up as well. How do you normally approach that? I've never run a marathon, but I sometimes struggle with the taper for any race because I just want to keep on pushing. How do you approach the marathon taper?
I've done the same taper now, four marathons in a row. So
yeah,
it's hard because if you come off the gas too much, you feel lethargic. If you do too much, you go into heavy legs. We tried different things over the years, like maybe before short races, you know, we do like say if a race on a Sunday, we might do like 2 miles of tempo on the Friday, maybe some strides, something like that. It doesn't work for me. I prefer to keep fast, keep the pop in my legs. Normally my last session would be before a marathon on Sunday would be on the Tuesday. You know, something really easy and simple, like 3x a mile, then marathon Sunday. So I'd say like I've kept it the same now. Every day is almost the same in my last 2 weeks because it works for me. I'm a creature of habit, and I take confidence from that as well from previous marathons. So yeah, I'm happy to stick with that moving forwards.
Yeah, and in terms of like other training aspects, so like nutrition, sleep, strength and conditioning, all the stuff that runners don't always necessarily want to do, but it's an important part of the training nonetheless. How important do you think that is? And yeah, what's your approach to those sort of other disciplines?
I think, you know, obviously sleep's very important. It's how we adapt, it's how we grow. So I always, you know, try and get enough sleep of a night. I do work, but I always try and nap on session days. So not long woke up now, to be fair. So I'll nap on I always try and nap on a Tuesday and a Friday, even if I don't nap any other days a week, because I find it hard with work. So I think getting enough sleep is really, really important. That's the most important thing. Nutrition, yeah, it's obviously important. You know, getting good variety in there, a good healthy balance. I think you need a bit of everything, especially when you're running high mileage. You know, if I, you know, I eat junk food because I feel like I need it. I'm craving that fuel for the fire, and I don't. If I cut that out, I start feeling, you know, I don't feel great at all off it. So, staying hydrated really important. And I think, yeah, I mean, foam rolling, massage, all the usual things. Again, nothing fancy. Just keeping it simple, really. Same with food. I don't believe in diets that are maybe too extreme one way or the other. I think just, you know, I don't think you should cut out carbs. I understand why people are vegan, and that's fine. But personally, for a marathon, I don't think I should be, for me, for my body. I just don't think any extreme one way or the other works. Just a good balance for me.
Yeah. And you're part of a very strong training group as well. You run Team New Balance Manchester, coached by Steve Vernon. What are your thoughts on like the importance of a strong training group?
Yeah, and especially being part of it now, I can definitely see the benefits. You know, when you have bad days, they help you through them, things like that. You're there to support each other, give each other motivation. The bar's constantly being raised. You see one of your teammates running really well, and you want to do that as well. You know, you see the amount of hard work and effort Steve puts into it. And it's just in that professional environment, you know, you're thriving to be as good as you can be. But also, you know, at the moment, you know, I'm training with someone who's run 13:20 for 5K in the summer, you know, up to someone running 2:10 for marathon. You know, we've got a real mix in the group, and I think we complement each other well, we get on well. I think that's a big thing with Steve in terms of recruiting for the team. You know, they have to kind of fit, you know, obviously his beliefs and his philosophy, but also get on with the other people in the team, otherwise it just won't work. So yeah, I feel really lucky and privileged to be part of Team New Balance Manchester, and yeah, I've really enjoyed it over the past few years.
And having the support of New Balance as well must be brilliant for, yeah, being able to live like a full-time athlete, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, New Balance obviously invested heavily in the team. There's an athlete house. I don't live in the athlete house myself, but there's, you know, four or five of the team in the house at the moment. I live away from the house. Ross Millington lives away from the house, and obviously Steve doesn't live in the house. So yeah, it's good. You know, we often meet there for runs in the mornings and things like that. And we have a laugh and we get the training done, and that's, I wouldn't want it any other way. I think when all the sport, when I've been growing up, when we were swimming, football, I've always been part of teams that I've had a good time, we've had a laugh, but we've got the hard work done. That's just how I like it, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And how does that atmosphere, does it ever change when you're like competing against each other, or is it always, you know, yeah, good spirits?
We want to beat each other 100%, but we want to win the race and turn around and our teammate be second, you know. So it's, we help each other through training. We don't race each other in training. We're not like that. We, you know, we stick to paces, you know, and if someone's having a good day and they want to push on, then fine. But in terms of racing, it's every man for himself. We know that. And if one of my teammates didn't want to beat me, I'd be questioning why they didn't want to beat me. So, yeah, we want to kill each other when we race, but just like we would any other competitor. And that's fine. That's how you raise the standards, and that's how you run faster. So that's good with me. But as I say, I want to win, but I want to look around. I genuinely want to see one of my teammates, you know, behind me.
And what's your thoughts on those kind of sponsored elite training groups? We've obviously seen more of them in America with Barrowman and Hoka and the Oregon, not Oregon Project, but would you like to see more of this set up in the UK? You think it would help develop British distance running as a whole?
Yeah, 100%. And I'm surprised, and I wish that more brands maybe would have invested in it since New Balance did. You know, I thought maybe we'd have seen a few others pop up. And I know, obviously, it's a significant amount of money to invest each year. But we're lucky in the UK, we have a really good club scene. You know, there's some great athletic clubs up and down the country. But I think looking at it now, if there's no kind of flexibility there. You're there, you're training Tuesday night, Thursday night, Saturday morning, longer on Sunday. And it's, you know, we've got the luxury where if we've had a hard race on a Sunday, we maybe then train on the Wednesday and then, you know, kind of switch our week up a little bit and things like that. We're not restricted to training a certain times each night. And it's very, 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 very difficult to make a living from the sport, even at the top level. So I think having the brands behind it really helps. And you've seen the success in America, the amount of guys that are running so well over there. And it's partly down to the brands getting, you know, well, it's all down to the brands getting involved, really. You know, it couldn't be possible without them. So hopefully we might see some more in the future. I don't know. But yeah, it'd be good. And but, you know, the club scene in the UK is really good as well. And I think that's really healthy. The road relays and things like that are great events. And obviously hope that continues as well.
Yeah. Does it ever come with any more like external pressure, I suppose, the fact that a brand is behind you as much as New Balance are? And do you feel like you have to perform because of that? Or do you put enough pressure on yourself that it doesn't make that much difference anyway?
I think you probably put enough pressure on myself to perform. I'm sure there'd become a point where New Balance would say, no, off you go. But I think they're a very understanding brand. They stood by me when I had my injuries and my illness, which, you know, I'm forever grateful for. You know, they're certainly not a sort of brand that are going to cut you after a bad year. They're going to, you know, they want to return, obviously, an investment, I'm sure. But they also want to work with the athlete and understand what's going on. And, you know, you don't know what the plan is long term anyway. So I don't personally feel any pressure from New Balance. I think it's a great company to be part of. And I'm not just saying that, you know, I've been sponsored by two other brands in the past, and at New Balance you feel part of a family. After a good race, you may be called into the office and things like that. You know people in the office from different departments, which were, you know, a massive company. I think it's huge. So yeah, the guys, you know, obviously Pete Riley, who looks after the sponsored athletes, they really look after you, very generous. And I think the athletes, they choose to run for New Balance, so obviously all a certain type of athlete as well, and everyone seems to get on well.
And you mentioned the strength of the UK club running scene. You still run for Liverpool Harriers, don't you? You run with the road relays quite a few times, don't you?
Yeah, I wish, you know what, I wish I did it more. I really do. And because I love doing the road relays, that's kind of where I guess, I, you know, it helped my progression. But yeah, I love nothing more than doing a road relay, but it doesn't always fit. And especially like the spring ones, if you're training for a spring marathon, and likewise an autumn marathon. So they just haven't fitted for me as well as I would have liked over the years. But, you know, the sport moves on as well. There's a lot of guys at Liverpool now I don't actually know who they are anymore. My sort of generation, my friends, aren't necessarily competing anymore, which is a shame. But yeah, I'll, you know, if I can run for the club, I always try and do it. And it's also things like the British League. I don't think it is what it was anymore. I think the British League was a great playground for practicing race tactics. You know, I quite often do an 800, 1500 double, things like that, which I think helped me over 5K. And they were always great trips, nice little weekends away. But the British League didn't seem to be what it once was, which is a shame. But yeah, hopefully I can get to do some road relays. And if not the next couple of years, maybe when I get a bit older.
Absolutely. Well, we always do some quick fire questions as well. So yeah, just some shorter, quicker answers. If you could go for a run with any athlete, runner, or anyone dead or alive, who would it be?
I'm going to go Jeff Smith, Liverpool Harriers club record holder, club legend, and just a genuinely funny guy to be around.
If you could only compete in one race a year, like not a distance but an actual event, which one would it be?
Oh, good question. London Marathon, because it's fast and a good course and atmosphere.
Your favourite session?
Alternating Ks, so something like 16 by 1 kilometre, alternating one just faster than marathon pace, one just slower than marathon pace.
And least favourite session?
Ooh, it's like something like 6 by a mile at 10K pace on the track. Tough.
Yeah, I agree. Do you listen to any pre-race music or any particular artists?
Do you know what? Not really. Maybe used to when I was younger, but not anymore. I listen on some runs to podcasts, but I don't necessarily listen to music when I'm running or pre-race.
A book or a TV podcast recommendation, doesn't have to be running related, but
book. You wouldn't like what I'm reading at the moment. Jürgen Klopp, Bring the Noise. So probably not a great recommendation. That's what I'm reading at the moment. I like to read football books. I like to switch off a little bit as well. Likewise with, you know, telly and stuff like that. What are we watching at the moment? We're not really watching it at the moment. Not long finished Power. That was a good watch.
Yeah. If you go back in time to witness any sporting event, which one would you choose? I think this might be Liverpool related or...
Yeah, it could be. I'd love to go back. I'd love to, well, It'd be great to have seen Liverpool win the league in front of fans, wouldn't it? So if I could go back and get fans in the stadium, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. And finally, split shorts or half tights?
Depends on the weather, doesn't it? If it's windy and cold, it's half tights. If not, split shorts. So yeah, that's really sit on the fence to answer that one.
And where can people find you on social media? Instagram, Twitter, anywhere else?
Instagram. It's J77NWY. And you can probably get me on Twitter and Facebook, but I don't really use them as much. But it's I think it's JohnnyMellon9 on Twitter.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time.
No worries, it's all a pleasure. Thank you. We'll be right back.